So, Dave, I got to share with you this this little moment I had with my wife over the weekend.
Wait, whoa, no, hold on. I'm backing out immediately.
Well, actually, if we're, speaking of delightful moments with one's wife, congratulations on your recent wedding anniversary. I saw that nice
19
picture.
19 years, Brad. We're coming up on 20. I think we might do something special for 20. That seems like a worthwhile date to do it. But, 19 years, not too shabby.
Yeah, they said it wouldn't last.
You jerk. I was talking to your mom. She said she had her doubts. And,
she said she lost $20 that day. So I wake up and I tell my wife, I had the most bizarre dream last night. And she says, what? I go, I got to tell you, I was dating Blanche Devereaux from the Golden Girls.
Okay, what?
I was dating Rue McClanahan. And she says, wait a minute. Where was I? I said, well, you must have been dead. She goes, dead?
What?
I said, well, listen, if you were alive, I'd be with you. But you weren't, so I must have been with Rue McClanahan. She says, wait a minute. Maybe we got divorced. I said, no. The only reason I wouldn't be with you is if you weren't on the planet. You know, that's the only way. So she says, well, what were you doing with Blanche? And I said, we were standing in the CVS. And she said, oh, by the way, tomorrow you're going to get me pregnant. And I said, that's impossible because I've been snipped. I had a vasectomy. I can't. This is not going to happen. They took that bull out to pasture, as they say. Exactly. And she said, this is the best part. She goes, oh, that's OK, because I've never had a tattoo. And in my dream logic, her not having had a tattoo meant that I could get her pregnant, even though I had a vasectomy.
Well, there's a billion things to unpack with this whole dream.
Yeah,
there's a billion. Wait, okay. So, in your dream logic, the presence of a tattoo counteracts the inability of the old snipperoo to have done its job.
Right, right. Wow. It's an override. It's an override.
Suddenly.
and she desperately wants to have my babies. And I said, listen, I'm 51 years old. I don't want to have any more kids. And she says, well, I'm 43. Because, you know, she always lied about her age. She says, I'm 43 and women my age have children all the time. And I said,
God.
I'm 51 and men my age run marathons, but I'm not going to do that either. And we got into a whole big fight, and we broke up that night. And my wife says...
Oh, no, you and Rue McClanahan? Oh, no.
Me and Rue McClanahan broke up because I wouldn't get her pregnant. And my wife said, you know, the most disappointing thing about that dream is? She says, it's your dream. It's your fantasy. You can have anybody you want. You can have... But you didn't choose Linda Carter. You didn't choose Pamela Anderson. She goes, you didn't even choose your go-to fantasy standby, Charisma Carpenter, which you remember from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, my God. Your eyes got very serious. People need to know Brad leaned into the camera to look at me.
And you remember Charisma Carpenter, don't you? Because I do.
But listen, they're serious, and then they're serious. But she said, you choose Rue McClanahan over all of them. And I said, yeah. She says, yeah, we were divorced.
Oh my God, Brad, I love the fact that in your mind, like, your sweet wife has left the earth. You're now a free man again in your dream. And you're like, I could date anyone I want. And your brain only allows you to go for one of the Golden Girls. You're like, that's what I deserve. I deserve someone who has a cane. That's what I deserve.
It could have been much worse. It could have been Bea Arthur.
What's funny about this, Brad, is remember in the Super Bowl a few weeks back when J-Lo was strutting her stuff and all these memes went about around saying J-Lo is 50, Rue McClanahan on the Golden Girls was 50. And like, what an unfair world this is. And people are like, I can't even let it go at 50. Now I have to match J-Lo.
You've got to keep up with J-Lo.
I got to keep up with the J-Los. But anyway, that is funny that your go-to choice is like, well, my sweet wife is gone. I guess I'll date one of the Golden Girls.
Well, listen, I maintain that was one of the best written TV sitcoms of all time.
Oh.
You can stack that one up against anything, and it comes out at or near the top.
My wife's career, Gloria, we've come into contact with two writers that worked on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And they, both of them said, what a training ground for comedy writing that show was. So, like, it was such a go-to for a humorous room. It was, and also, I don't know. I feel like that's a show that could be rebooted if you wanted to. That still works. That format.
Yeah, if you found the right team, absolutely.
Did you ever see the show Hot in Cleveland? Did you ever see that one?
Yes, yes, I remember Hot in
that
Cleveland.
That was a little bit of a reboot of Golden Girls when you think about it, you know? Same kind of pitch. But anyway, all right, I don't know why we want to, but I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about Brad Geiger making out with Rue McClanahan while talking about comics.
And making a living making out with Rue McClanahan from comics. Man, that was hard to say. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his buddy Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. First of all, I just want to mention to the world, especially to our 1.5, possibly 2 readers in Alaska, that Brad Geiger is going to be making his way up to Alaska for the Alaska Comics Camp.
That's right.
This is the Alaska Robotics Comic Camp held in Juneau. And so if you have plans, or if you have plans, let me cancel them. That's what I'm getting at. If you have plans, cancel them and come see Brad Geiger and I in Juneau, Alaska. We'll be signing at the mini con before we go out into the woods to talk about Stan Lee reaction to bears. That's what we're going to be doing.
Well, after you came back last year, having had such a rewarding experience, I put that on the calendar. And even though this year is a terrible year for me to be traveling, by the way, longtime listeners of the show remember that I moved out of my house Thanksgiving weekend because we were doing a home renovation, moved in with my in-laws.
And this was in 2016. Everybody, just so you remember.
It feels like it. And we're still living with my in-laws in their one-bedroom, one-bathroom
condo.
Oh, they say 2.5 weeks, but in contractor talk, you know that means another month. But that's going to be, we'll be soon moving back in. We've got another big trip scheduled, and there's so many things going on that I actually told my wife, I said, you know what, maybe this isn't the best year to go. And she literally overrode me. She vetoed it.
Because much like Rue McClanahan, she loves you.
Yeah.
She loves you.
And I looked at her and I said, you know, thank you for being a friend. And I said, you know, we wandered down the road and back again.
That's the joke we go out on. That's the best. Thank you for being a friend. Oh, my God, Brad, that was the best joke you've had in weeks. Oh, thank you for being a friend. All right, that's been Comic Lab for the week.
I've been much funnier than that. But she vetoed me because she said, I remember you listening to that show and talking about it when Dave came back, and she said, there's going to be a lot of stuff. We can work it out. You should go. This is going to be fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to this.
I honestly, Brad, and I say this as a friend, my job when I get you to Alaska is to help you relax. Because you have had kind of the, you know, that Latin phrase of annus horribilis, whatever, the terrible year. You've had the terrible year in terms of having to live with. And so, like, my job is to get you out into the woods, throw a baseball with you, have a glass of scotch, sketch and play games until 3 a.m. We're going to have a great time. I'm so excited for you to go to comics camp. It's going to be so fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go and talk comics with a lot of people who are, you know, immersed in it
for an entire
weekend.
It's
going
to
be great.
It's fun to let your hair down, what's left of it, and just basically have a sleepaway camp. It's basically like an adult sleepaway camp where we talk about comics, we learn about comics, we play and design a lot of games, we do a lot of sketch things. It's just, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for you to come to Alaska. So anyway, if you are in the greater Alaska area, I love that I said the greater Alaska area.
Well,
it's only the largest state within in the U.S. by geography, so... Anyway, hop a plane, jump on a boat, get on a car, and come on down and see Brad Geiger in Juneau, Alaska this spring. I'll have the dates for you up on the Patreon site. I don't have it at the moment.
It's late April, I know that. Like around the 27th and 28th.
Yep. Anyway, Let's get to our first question, Brad. This comes in from Jonathan Small over at patreon.com/comiclab, and he said, Dad and Brave, literally wrote Dad and Brave, which is great. Love the new show mascots. My podcast co-host might be getting a new job in a faraway state. We record online already, but what are other critical top tips for maintaining your long-distance partnership? And Brad, I'm going to extend that not only from this podcaster's question, but to cartoon collaborators and comic collaborators and writing collaborators and any kind of collaborator that is working state to state or across nations or, you know, across an ocean. How do you, Brad, recommend maintaining a relationship at long distance?
Well, the first thing I did, which kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but it actually it made a big, big difference. With you being in Los Angeles and Scott Kurtz moving to Seattle, one of the first things I did when I moved into the studio is I bought a separate clock that sits in a different place in my studio, and I've got that set to West Coast time.
Oh, you're like one of those old newsrooms, like with the four clocks, one that says Sydney, one that says Berlin, one that says New York.
Yeah, and I've got my Los Angeles clock sitting right over in the bookshelf. And because my mind doesn't work that like this morning when I was getting ready for Comic Lab, we had put a different date on our schedule, a different time on our schedule. And you said 11 o'clock West Coast time. And I literally had to stop. And I had to think, okay, because I know I either add or subtract three, but I got to picture the sun moving across the United States. And it's like, okay, it was 11 o'clock for me before it's going to be 11 o'clock for them. Therefore, I've got to add. That's 11, 12, 1. I literally had to do that.
I'm laughing because maybe you do need to date one of the Golden Girls. You're like, all right, now let's see. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. All right,
set your sundials.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
No, but Joel. I really got to. So for my mind, it's a lot easier to have another clock that's set to your time so that anytime that I'm in the studio that I'm liable to want to ask you a question or bother you about something or throw a joke off of you, then I immediately don't have to do the math. I know what time it is.
Yeah, and I'll second that, and I'll tell you why, everyone, because I am the worst friend in the world to Brad Geiger when it comes to texting. I am working on another collaboration with Fred Schroeder here in Los Angeles, which you'll hear about in a few weeks. And so we have been texting a lot. And if I'm lying in bed at 11 o'clock, I know I can text him at 11 o'clock and ask him a quick question or ping an idea off him. But then I'll be like, oh, I also have that idea about Comic Lab. I'll text Brad at 11 o'clock. What a jerk I am. It's 2 a.m. and I've just texted Brad. So he's over there. He's got his oiled cap on with mother and he's gone down for his nap. And he's, you know.
In the futon in the living room in my in-laws condo. Hot times with us. But no.
And it's unfair. It's unfair of me to text him at 2 a.m. In the same way that, and thankfully I have no notifications turned on. That's another one, by the way.
Well, you never bother me a bit because when I go to, I have a bedtime. Maybe I should be dating Rue McClanahan. I just heard myself say I've got a bedtime, but I do. I've gotten to the point now where I've earned a bedtime. Instead of staying up until midnight, I go to bed at a certain time. And
if I don't get to bed by 8 p.m., then my teeth start to hurt. Anyway, I'm delightful to be married to. Hold on, I've got to put my foot salve on, rub the salve on my feet. It's 8:30 and I've got to get into my bed.
I am the worst. We went to a New Year's Eve party, and of course it was past my bedtime. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just drooping and drooping and drooping. And my wife is very happy to be around talking to people and stuff. And I'm just like, I just want one thing, and that's to be in my bed. I don't care about New Year's. I don't care about this stuff that you people are talking about.
Oh, hell, you're going to be fun in Alaska.
Oh,
yeah. All right, Brad, 10 p.m., we're starting a new game. No, I need to go lay down. Hold on. I'm done.
You people wore me out. No, but that's another thing. If you've got somebody in a different time zone, learn how to use those notification restrictions so that after a certain point, your partner doesn't even have to worry about waking you up. And in fact, I kind of like that I get that message because it's the first thing I see in the morning when I wake up, or more likely 3 o'clock when I have to walk over and take a pee break. But, you know, I one way or the other.
Oh, my God, Rue McClanahan, what are we doing?
We have just established that I'm ancient.
So other things that I would recommend for a partnership that's across the country. So cognizant of time, that Brad is better than that than I am. And then I think also there's a certain amount of checking in that I would recommend. Like, for example, if you know you need to talk about something of substance for a while, usually what Brad and I will do is just a quick ping. And this is basic human stuff. Well, I'll text him, be like, hey, you got 5 minutes? I don't know what part of your day is. You got 5 minutes to talk. And then I'll call him for a 20-minute phone call. I won't put him on the spot of being like, now you're talking to Dave Kellett for 20 minutes. Straddle in here. Here we go. So I do that. I also think, you know, it's worth, just because we're talking about partnerships, I am always a big fan of contractualizing things before you starting a partnership. I know this is not the question. This is not part of working in a long-distance relationship, but it's always worth mentioning to people because they never think the thing that they're working on is going to succeed in such a way that money will become an issue.
Right.
Or they never think that the buddy that they're excited to start it with, that they might have issues down the line. Just contractualize it. If nothing else, a simple one-page bullet-pointed thing of points of agreement that you can both sign and have to point to. But ideally, a lawyer, have, you know, pay $200-$300 and have a lawyer draft up a quick one or two pager about shared rights or ownership and payments and all that sort of stuff. That's something that Brad and I did, and I would recommend that as well. Any other last minute thoughts, Brad, for a long distance relationship?
One that I really, really believe in, but I feel a little bit guilty about suggesting because I think it's being allowed to kind of die a natural death, but it's Wunderlist. With a U, Wunderlist.
Beth and I were just talking about that in the studio. It's been a godsend for us in our workflow.
And we've got, Dave and I keep a bunch of topics and a bunch of things. It's basically a to-do list type of an app that multiple people can sign into. And, you know, it syncs and we can add things. So if we've got it, for example, a topic we want to talk about on the show, we've got a folder for that. If there's something, all of the $5 Patreon questions, there's a folder for that.
Yep.
And so we're able to keep kind of keep track of what we want to do and ideas, and we can both look at it in real time. And and Wunderlist or a
similar version of
type
that.
Of app is going to be a really good thing for you to do. Anything that you and your partner can stay organized on.
And the key thing there will be, and I'm sure Google has something like this, and I'm sure other people have something like this, you just need to both have read-write abilities to the to-do list. And that's key. And then the big thing with a read-write, or sorry, with a to-do list, a shared list like this, is that it keeps Brad and I from pestering each other daily with small miscellany that absolutely is critical for the functioning of the podcast, but we don't need to be like, hey, Brad, what about this one question? Like, no, we'll talk about that later. Just put it on the to-do list and we'll do it all at once, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a great way to both capture and store information for your product, and it's a great way to maintain a workable timeline for when you talk about problems, when you talk about issues. Be like, all right, let's see what's on the list. Oh, we've got five tax things to talk about Comic Lab right now, Brad, whatever
right,
it is, you know.
Right.
So that kind of thing. And so, yes, I will think that's a great way to go out on that one. And so let's jump over to our next question here.
I've got that question right here, and this one's coming into us from a $5 Patreon backer named Kevin, and it goes like this. Do you have some go-to panel or page layouts you find work for certain moments in your comics, like a page of dialogue or an action scene, or how about the in-between pages that are leading to an important scene? Dave, do you have certain compositions that you consider to be go-to panel compositions?
I do. None of them are very exciting, but I will say this. With Sheldon, the format for me of that one is it's a gag-a-day comic strip, but it's also been running for 20 years, 21 years, 22 years, something like that now.
Yeah.
The consideration there is that you want to have certain touch-tone moments in a gag-a-day comic strip so that there's still some continuing familiarity. With a comic like that, even if you are doing very disparate topics day to day or, disparate jokes. And what I mean by that is when Schultz returns to the doghouse of Snoopy lying on the doghouse, you feel a comfort. You feel a return to something that you know. Even if Snoopy yesterday was talking about the moon and today he's talking about tree growth, you know, whatever it is. And so there's a familiarity with going back to scenes like that. For me with Sheldon, I have scenes like characters in the swimming hole, which is like a local little pond they have. Arthur the Duck sitting on Grandpa's head in his reading chair, and scenes like that, which I go back to again and again over the last 20 years to sort of give you a familiarity. Now, when it comes to long form stuff like Drive, unlike Brad, I don't do as much environmental work with Drive. Mine is more of characters, for the most part, against a blank background. It's more the way Brad hates it when I say this, more the way Shakespeare would have presented his plays, where the characters are just kind of standing there as Shakespeare would have had. There's not a lot of set work, you know what I mean? Whereas Brad very capably draws a lot of set work. So to you, Brad, I will turn the question over to you. How do you have go-to panels or constructions or layouts for your long-form story with Evil Inc. that maybe I don't have?
Well, so here's the thing. I totally agree with you. When I was doing Evil Inc. as a comic strip, I had kind of fallback scenes that I would use quite a bit.
Yep.
When I transitioned into doing a graphic novel, my thought immediately became, yes, I do have go-to panel compositions, and when I'm using them, I'm doing less of a job than I could be doing. In other words, I tried to very quickly try to talk myself out of relying on go-to panel compositions because I didn't. Instead of going to a go-to panel composition, how about think about the scene and what's the right way to phrase that scene, right? So something that was perfectly good for a comic strip, I didn't think fit my idea of long form comics very well. I think when you start to think about this in terms of go-to panel compositions, what you end up doing for most of us is you end up with what I call a puppet show comic. Everybody's cropped at the mid-torso. They're facing each other and they're talking to each other.
And
when you start thinking about your craft in terms of go-to panel compositions, instead of what's the right composition for this scene, then you kind of inevitably end up with puppet shows.
This doesn't
cast aspersions on what you're saying about those touchstone moments that you come back to. That's a different thing. And that's something particularly for comic strips is useful, downright efficient, right? Because you evoke the memory of all those past moments in that moment. It's like, okay, I know what I'm going to get here. I try to think a lot more along the lines of what's the best view for this scene? What's the best way to angle it? What have I been doing for the past three pages? Is this going to be more of the same? And if so, it's going to be boring after a while. Like being exposed to the same thing over and over and over again is boring. So what have I done leading up to this moment? What's a different way? Is there a way that I could tilt the camera or bring the camera down or bring the camera up that's going to give an added additional emotion to that scene? That kind of thing, I think that in that regard, in this kind of comics, I would caution you away from go-to panel compositions.
And so on this one, if you're not finding advice that you like in comics how-to books, Brad hit the key word there, which was camera work. And so I would advise a little quick trip down to the library to get some how-to on being a DP or director of photography or camera work for film or, you know, even a beginner's guide to camera work, because you'll see, like Brad said, I am very often, for most of my 22 years as creating Sheldon, guilty of puppet comics. That is what that strip is. It's a little more reliant on the joke, the witticism, than it is on the art. And so the comic characters become a little bit more puppets. But with Drive, I'm learning, and kind of my challenge for my next decade to myself is more dynamic camera angles, because what you can do with a camera angle in a way that that even character work can't do is you can either express positions of power, you can express positions of sympathy or of empathy. Mm-hmm. The camera is doing the work for you. So, for example, if you're shooting at eye level, and when I say shooting, let's just pretend that a comic is being shot.
Right.
When you're shooting at eye level, there is a sort of in-the-room quality, right? It's kind of like why reality TV always shoots at eye level. If you're shooting with a high bird's-eye view down, you're making the character, you're reinforcing the sense of smallness that that character feels in that moment, or emotional isolation or introspection, right? Mm-hmm. If you're shooting with the camera low and shooting up on the character, akin to how the Soviets did socialist realist poses for Marx or for Lenin, right, where their hand is upraised and they're shooting up. That's expressing and reinforcing a sense of power where the character feels energized and empowered, right, to do the thing they've got to do. What I'm getting at is we can learn a lot from film based on the camera angle, quote unquote, that we use in our comics. And so to Brad's point, I have been guilty of talking puppet, and I'm trying to get away from that in the next decade.
Well, I wouldn't say guilty. I think that's perfectly not only appropriate, but useful in comic strips. But for long form comic, I found that it was not helpful.
Yeah, fair. Okay. Yeah.
Just to put one final point on this, to add on and do a little yes and to your point about the books about directors of photography, I want to point you to something that gets passed around all the time. You've probably already seen it. If not, I'm not even going to bother to put a link to it on the Patreon page, because you're going to just put a couple of words. It's going to come right up. You'll do a Google search.
I already know what you're going to say. Yep, this is great. Yep. I love being your friend. This is great.
It's the 22 panels that always work by the great Wally Wood. Yes. One of my all-time favorites, Wally Wood. But he did a page full of different panel compositions. It's called 22 Panels That Always Work. And you should absolutely do like I do, have a printout of that somewhere that you can view it in your studio. Because if nothing else, when you feel stymied by the scene that you're doing, and it's like, oh, I can't, I've done this, I've done that, I there's nothing else to do to make this scene pop. The answer is, yeah, there's about 20 other things you can do.
Absolutely,
and Wally Wood gives you a great view of all of them in 22 panels.
Yeah, no, that and there's versions of that, by the way.
Yeah.
So people have sprung board. So if you do the Google image search for Wally Wood's 22 panels at work, you'll find other artists have been like, yeah, that was great. Here's my 30 panels that work, or here's my 40 panels. So people have taken that. And also, so there's been some nice, because if you look for the famous image that Wally Wood had put together, it's kind of cut and pasted, right, Brad, in an old paste-up style. Mm-hmm. And there are other people that have been like, that's really nice, but here it is in vector, or here it is like all cleaned up where you can print it out as a nice PDF next to your computer. So yes, Brad's suggestion is probably the best capstone for that one. Or how you can do new and innovative panels in your work. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, Dave, I got to tell you, how you been liking your Wacom One?
Oh, yes, indeedy, Brad. I got to tell you, I've been loving it. I have been loving it. So we have been using it around the studio in our immediate workflow, like not even like to take it on as a mobile platform. We have plugged it right into Beth's computer, and she has been using it mostly here in the studio. And a couple immediate takeaways. Mm-hmm. I love the screen.
Yeah.
I currently work on a 4K Wacom, but this, the size of it, the 2K is super crisp for that 13-inch screen.
Yeah.
And we were curious to see what the reaction times would be for the pen on this Wacom, because it's essentially, as we talked about last week, it's a pro-am Wacom, you know, pros can use it, but also amateurs at the price point. And we were like, well, maybe that means a little more sluggish of a pen.
Yeah.
Not at all. No, like she's using it for all of our pro work. She created something really special yesterday, actually, that's coming out for Comic Lab that we'll talk about later.
Did she do that on the one?
She did that on that Wacom.
That's amazing.
You'll love it when we talk about that next week. So yeah, we've loved it. How about you?
Oh, I'm loving it. So I had a little bit of a hitch because I needed to buy a dongle for my
more dongle talk, everybody. Dongle. Here we go.
Yeah, I need.
If you didn't get enough of Brad's dongle last week, we got some more dongle talk for you.
All dongle all the time. Well, I actually needed to buy a special adapter because my iMac laptop did not have an HDMI port, and I didn't even think about that. So I had to wait a little bit before I could use it. If your computer does not have an HDMI port, you are going to need to get an adapter. For me, this was an HDMI to Lightning adapter. And then I plugged that in and it fired right up. Works like a dream. I've been using Clip Studio on it for the last week. It works really, really well. And the thing that blew my mind, so all... Last show, we were talking about how, you know, we were comparing it to that old workhorse, the 12WX, and that was originally a travel Cintiq back in 2012. And that's what I'd been using for years. And even though the tablet itself is smaller than the 12WX, the screen on the Wacom one is bigger. And I don't know why I didn't add two and two on that. The screen is bigger on the Wacom one than it is on that 12WX by a good inch or an inch and a quarter or so.
Yeah. So I have the Cintiq Companion, which is a couple years more recent than your 12WX.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same size screen, but infinitely less weight and infinitely less overall size for the machine. Anyway, so we've been loving it. And it's a huge shout out and thanks to our sponsors for this week, Wacom at WACOM.com for sending those to us and letting them try us out because it's a nice way to be able to talk about them on the show. And also, I would like to pay it forward, Brad, because this now means that I have four Wacoms in the studio, three that I've bought and one that Wacom kindly gave us.
Yeah.
And so I want to pay that forward. If you are listening to this podcast and you are a cartoonist in Southern California and would like my older model Wacom 21UX, I won't ask anything for it. Maybe you can buy me a coffee shop. We'll meet up at a coffee shop and I'll give it to you.
Buy you an entire coffee shop?
No, buy me a coffee. if you are within Southern California and you'd like a 21UX, just have a look online at what kind of dongles you'd need to Brad's point. It's an older model, but it's a workhorse, and I'm happy to give it to you for free. So if you are listening to the podcast and in Southern California and you want it, email me at dave@davekellett.com, and I will meet up at a coffee shop with you and give you a free 21UX if you'd like it.
That is super nice of you,
Dave. I will say, though, don't make a long trip. If, like, you're in Las Vegas or in San Diego or Santa Barbara, don't make the drive. But if you're around L.A., that's worth it. Anyway, it's just my way of paying it forward to whoever might like it.
Yeah. Well, Dave, along those lines, let's talk about another way we can pay it forward to our Patreon backers. Let's take a question from Patreon. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right. This one comes in from Susan Marks. And Susan says, what tools do you use to keep track of your writing? Do you use Scrivener? Dave, you using Scrivener over there?
I am so glad to be asked this question because, Susan, you will be unhappy to know that I have the most ridiculous cattywampus system for keeping track of my writing. And usually when I have an idea, this is how I capture my ideas. Even though Brad and I earlier on the show said Wunderlist is incredible for capturing ideas, mm-hmm. and I should use Wunderlist to be fair. What I have done for the last 15 or 20 years is I will email myself a subject heading that says idea, and then I write the script in that email. It's so dumb, but my thinking was, back when I started this as a process, I always have some form of email on or around me, and then it's captured.
Yeah.
But there's infinitely better ways to do it. Brad, how do you do it? How do you capture your writing?
Listen, I've tried so many of those. I downloaded Scrivener. I've downloaded different apps, reminder apps, and this thing and that thing, and you know, back in the day, even bought, you know, equipment to do this, you know, like a voice recorder. I've got over there with a lavalier microphone when I first started teaching college. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to use that and clip it on. And then I'll do voice memos to myself and this and that.
I'm imagining you as a power businessman in the 90s walking down a street in Philadelphia. Memo to self. Have Margaret draft up the new contract to Amalgamated Holdings, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, just anything to make myself, you know, look official. And I got to be honest with you, none of that stuff works for me. Until I found one tool And I found this thing. I was at a specialty shop, as a matter of fact. And this is great. See if you can find this in a store near you.
Here comes the sarcasm. I can feel it coming.
It's called a piece of paper and a pencil.
I knew it. I could feel it coming.
There's nothing. Yeah, well, you got me on camera now. You see the evil look in my eye. Honest to God, I get the same Canson sketchbook. Because I found one that I really like. It's got nice paper on for sketching, but mostly I just write stuff in it. And I just, it's with me everywhere. If I need to take a note, I'll take that out. I'll write stuff down. Yep. If I start a new sketchbook, I will literally take some of the old pages that are still important, Xerox them and tape them into new sketchbook.
Well, I don't do that, but yep, I'm listening.
I do everything on paper because I think it's better for your brain. In other words, we talked about before how we don't do writing on digital means because that act of writing it down and then scratching it out and circling it and arrowing it, I think it's better for your brain.
Okay, so I want to course correct because I realized I didn't give the full picture of how I write. And Brad is 100% correct that I want to course correct.
Yeah.
I use email where I send myself an email with the subject heading of idea. That's to capture the idea. That's I'm at the park, I'm at the supermarket, I'm at, you know, I don't want to lose a punchline or I don't want to lose a moment. So I capture the idea in email, right? But to Brad's point, then what I do is I get myself, honest to God, cup of coffee. I sit down in my brown writing chair. I invite my dog to come sit next to me. And then I get out, like Brad, an overly large Strathmore sketchbook. Mm-hmm. And I personally feel like writing in a sketchbook is better than writing on lined paper because you need that mix of flowing ideas and flowing sketches. You need to be able to sketch certain moments to yourself just to capture that, like their gesture is going to be this as they say that line, or the ship will be doing this as that line is being said. So you need to have that little bit of ability to sketch. But to Brad's point, a pen on paper, there is, especially for writing what we write, there is nothing better than that process of physically writing the words, physically scratching them out, but they're still secretly there. Unlike a text word that's deleted, the text is still on that page. It's still underneath that ink. You can see it if you need to go back. Because, as we all know, rewriting is about testing out 20 different permutations and seeing which one works. And so when it's on a written page, you can do that thing where you circle a bit of text and draw the arrow down to this part and circle another bit of text and put the arrow up to that part. And you're moving things around and trying around. All the stuff that a digital process doesn't allow for, at least as far as I've been familiar with. Maybe Scrivener can do a bunch of stuff that I don't know, but... also, just the physical act, the tactility of writing, there's something lovely about that in that it a little bit slows you down as you write.
Right.
And there's something nice about that. In fact, one of my favorite parts of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, for those that remember Douglas Adams' books, it's a sci-fi book set in somewhat vaguely in the future. Not really, but vaguely in the future. Anyway, there's one historically famous author in the galaxy who is the Shakespeare of the whole galaxy, and he's famous for having written his poetical works on banana type leaves, huge leaves up in a tree. And so in this book, someone gets the sci-fi idea of like, we'll travel back in time and we'll give him a word processor and then it'll be even better. And so they travel back in time and they give him a word processor and he just turns out crap. It's just the worst stuff in the world. And so there is something to be said for the tactility and the pace of writing with a pen that I think both Brad and I would endorse.
Absolutely. And final point, I will say this for capturing ideas out in the wild on the fly. I switched to Sketch Wallet a while ago, and I did, just having that little pad of paper and the pencil in there every now and again is the perfect thing for capturing an idea on the fly.
Well, Brad, let's move on to our next question from Shane Tucker. This comes in over at patreon.com/comiclab. Mm-hmm. And he says, hey, guys, still loving the podcast. I don't know why that qualifier makes me laugh.
Yeah, still, sounds like there's a time limit on that. I'm still loving it now. 3 weeks from Thursday, you guys are shit.
still, that's like, you know when you've ordered too large of a steak and you're like, I'm still loving it. But then you look on your plate and you're like, oh, I ordered too much steak.
By the time I get to the end of this plate, it's going to be bad.
Going to hate myself and this steak. Anyway, Shane says, hey guys, still loving the podcast. My question is, What are some things to do to improve on script writing for a long-form comic? I find when I write, I have difficulty with making the story flow and maintain the reader's interest. I took a creative writing class, which helped, but thought you all might have some other pointers to strengthen this. Keep up the great work. Brad, long-form story writing, what tips do you have both for making the individual page pop and the individual and the collective pages work together as a flowing story?
Well, that's a tough one because I don't think that this is a I think it's great you took a creative writing course. I don't think that this is a question of creativity. In other words, I don't think you should question your own creativity. This is not where you're lacking, in other words. From what I'm hearing from that question, the thing that you're going to focus on that's going to give you the most benefit, I think, in my opinion, is organization and planning. And the more that you can plan this story out, the more that you can outline it, know where you're going, make plans, know what's going to happen to certain characters further on down the line, the more you can adjust your writing now so that you can account for that and maybe set some things up that'll be beneficial later on down the road. Planning is going to be your number one thing. And then your number two thing is, in my estimation, is to, especially if you're doing this as a webcomic and putting it out, or if you're thinking about this in terms of a graphic novel, try to have something interesting happen on every page. Have every page have a reason, have significance, because there's nothing worth than going through page after page after page of nothing happening. It's not great in a book. It's hot death on the web, because nobody's going to stick around once they've got a couple updates of nothing happening. So you should be thinking about where your plot points are, how you can make this moment significant. Think about some of those things that we all love so much. I was just talking to my son about this because he was exposing a friend of his to Naked Gun. And they were laughing their butts off on the TV, on the couch watching TV, watching these Naked Gun movies. And she goes, "Oh my God, there's just like every 30 seconds, there's a joke every 30 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, and that's what makes it good. Even if it isn't a blockbuster joke, there's something happening. Boom, boom, almost like a heartbeat. Da-dunk, da-dunk, da-dunk. And if there's plot going on in the foreground, there's something funny going on in the background. In other words, you've got to have something happening.
A balance, yeah.
A lot, yeah. And so I think from what I'm reading in that question, you need to have you need to do more planning perhaps and know where your story's going so that you can craft the story so that it gets there a lot more easily. And also make sure that there's interesting things happening on every single page.
Yeah, I want to underline that because this is something that Brad taught me 15 or so years ago, which is that every page has to have a satisfying pop at the end. Mm-hmm. It's either a big advancement of plot or of a character's history. It's a joke. It's an explosion or something action-packed. You can imagine all the different genres of writing and emotional moments that you could have. But each page has to have something like that that pops at the end that sells the page to you, right? And then to Brad's point, you also want the story to be moving along at every point. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to have pages of or paragraphs of exposition on every page, but it does mean that some advance has to be made on every page where it feels like there is progress. So it has to be both satisfying and progressive in how it's moving along with the story. But Brad's idea that there are things happening in the background that are supplemental, but also bringing the entertainment value.
Yes.
And sometimes that can just be a beautiful vista. Sometimes that can be a joke in the background. Sometimes that can be a new setting that you have not yet shown, but you're hinting at, that kind of thing. The background-foreground interplay in a long-form story is important. And then the big picture that I want to add to this, which is different than what Brad was saying, which is that Brad was saying that this is an administrative problem, not a creative problem. You're not having problems being your creative. You're having problems with your planning, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to slightly tinker with that and say that the problem is not so much in your creativity. The problem is the editing of the creativity. Mm. I think editing is your friend here. If you are losing your readers, what that means is that whole chunk of pages was not necessary. you could have skipped that whole section, right? Like, yes. If I want to talk about Brad's day, I don't show you the boring 15 minutes where he was sitting in the car listening to Mozart and quietly sipping his coffee. I jump ahead to when he gets to the studio and pops that coat off and he's starting to work, right? That kind of thing. Like, there are editorial moments that you just excise out of your story. And so I want you to work on, like, thinking before you draw a sequence or an event in your story is this part truly necessary, or can I jump ahead? Can I excise this entire chunk out? Brad, thoughts?
Oh, I co-sign that 100%. In fact, we're talking about two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, Yes. Yeah.
Planning is before the writing happens, and editing is after the writing happens, but it all goes to the same basic point of, getting to a better place in your writing. I would say editing, even if you for some bizarre reason could only take advice from one of these categories and it came down between planning and editing, go with editing.
Yeah, editing, no, I think this is
super, super, super important. And if you look at 9/10 of the webcomics being published right now, the biggest problem they have is that they don't edit strongly enough or brutally enough.
Yeah, and I think to reinforce what Brad's saying there is that if you're going to listen to one of those two points, either the one that Brad brought up or the one that I brought up, you're going to want to listen to the one I brought up. Is what Brad wants to say, though, right, Brad? Is that what you're saying?
That's just a general rule overall when listening to this show.
So would you say, Brad, that we could edit your parts out? Would that be a good?
I would say that not only could we do that, but I'm sure there's somebody out there in the audience actively working on that. They've got an app that'll eventually give you comic lab without Brad and it'll be a much
better
show.
We just released my audio track, so you hear these moments of quiet where I'm listening going yeah, Brad, that's a good point. But I say that because I don't know if you guys have ever listened to this. Brad and I, at one point, we were joking around and listening to one of us, one of our solo tracks without the other one on it. It is so funny to listen to, no matter what the human is, if it's Brad or if it's me, whenever I'm listening to Brad, this is what you hear. Brad, that's a good point. Like, if you just isolate a microphone, nobody doesn't sound like an idiot when you're just isolated in an audio conversation.
All of a sudden, you turn into Floyd the Barber. Well, yes, Andy, that's absolutely right.
Andy, yeah, that's a great idea there you got there. Yeah, we could do that, Andy.
Well, Dave, do you have time for another $5 Patreon question?
I sure do, Brad. Here's the question. It comes in from Eric Campling, and it says, Hi, Dad. Now I did it again. Hi, Drad and Babe. That's a new one.
Got to be different. Look
at that. Hi, Drad and Babe. Now everybody's one-upping everybody. All right, Eric, good work there. Hi, Drad and Brave. Babe, this should be a quick one for you. You've mentioned several times to deliver content where your readers seek it. This includes Patreon, right? I backed a comic artist on Patreon a while back to realize his Patreon feed is only exclusive content. Shouldn't the free content also be in the Patreon feed, the one place for all the content to go? Or do creators want to keep free and exclusive content on separate sites to keep up the reach of the other social media platforms? In other words, would putting free content on Patreon be cutting off your nose to spite the face? Brad, thoughts about that? A Patreon feed, should only the exclusives go on there, or should everything go on there?
I got to be honest with you. If I'm looking at what I do on Patreon, and if something was purely public, I would not post it on Patreon. Now, having said that, all of my public stuff is on Patreon because the reward there is I post it early for certain Patreon backers. So their reward is seeing it early, and then it becomes public. But if I weren't offering that for some reason, let's say you took the early off the table, and I'm saying, and I'm left with, do I post this thing that's public? I don't think, I'm not sure that I do. Because it's not a reward. It's not necessarily gaining anything. And again, I feel very strongly that you're not using Patreon for publishing or for discovery, because it's not built for either of those two things. So let me parse my answer very, very carefully. I don't think there's anything wrong with posting your publicly available stuff on Patreon, specifically, even more so if you're doing it early and you can justify a reward. But also, I wouldn't feel pressured to put publicly available stuff on Patreon because I'm not so sure that's where Patreon's strength is. What do you think?
I politely disagree. I think for me, one of the implicit promises with Patreon is join Patreon. Your life is going to get better and it's going to be easier. You know what I mean? And by that, I mean, it's going to get better because you're going to get all the exclusive content and it's going to be easier. This is my sense of it. The implicit contract is going to be easier because you'll get that exclusive content with the public content really easy. You don't have to, like, I guess what I'm saying is you're making it harder for them if they have to jump through two hoops than if they just have to jump through one. So I personally would advocate for, if you're going to do exclusives, put your public stuff on the same feed as the exclusive stuff on Patreon.
I agree 100% because that's what I do. I would only say if you're going to do that, make it a reward. Make them feel special for it. But if they, again, if you're taking the early part out, I don't know that I'd feel pressured to do it. But I guess in my mind, I want to peg this to a reward. I want to reward those people for being Patreon backers. And if you're taking the early off the table and it's publicly available content, there's less of a reward. I agree with you. I do it the way you do it, obviously. But I don't know that we should make this other person that Eric is talking about necessarily feel bad for making that decision because they might have another reason for doing it that I can't suss out at this point.
Well, that's very nice of you to this stranger that we have no idea who they are. Like, I love that you're just like, and I don't want to make this stranger feel bad about themselves. I'm sure they're doing their best in their cartooning career.
Yeah. And there might be an angle that we haven't thought about that might be playing into that.
Maybe. I also think, like, is it ruinous to not include the whole thing into the feed? No, I don't think so. But I think for me, one of the implied promises is that your life will be better and easier if you back the thing on Patreon. And I can't imagine separating that out. I will say this, though, Brad. This is a totally separate topic, but related. I am always kind of amazed as a creator that early release content is desirable for readers. I know that sounds stupid, that I should know that that's desirable. But there's a part of me that's like, really? This matters to you that you got it a week before everybody else? All right. Well, that's fine. I know that that's naive of me as a creator, because I'm so used to my schedules and what I'm producing and all that sort of stuff, that to me, it's always amazing that that is a go-to point of excitement for readers, that they're like, I get next week's Evil Inc. now.
But it shouldn't be, because it's not about the early. It's not about anything other than the fact that when they're getting that early thing, they're getting reinforced that they're a part of your community.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. You're right. Yes. Yeah, this is, again, one of the
community. And that's why, again, I say, I keep coming back to, if you're going to do that, you've got the ability to give it to them early, make good use out of it and post that thing early for Patreon backers and make them feel part of your community. Don't miss that opportunity, you know?
Well, Brad, that's a good point to put a capstone on that one. And I'm going to bring us over into A Few Kind Words, which is our favorite segment where folks who have rated and reviewed the podcast over at Comic Lab, we share the shout out. So this comes in for Comic Lab from Punk Gun. It says, I've bought the webcomics handbook they made, but this show really feels like an up-to-date course reminding me of the best sequential art comics classes I took at Savannah College of Art and Design. This is SCAD down in Savannah there, in Savannah, Georgia. It's a great dialogue from two guys who are chess deep. Oh, I don't know how I feel about that. Who are chess deep in their business and continue to analyze it like few others do. I don't know why I had a response to chess deep. Chess deep feels like
perfectly nice. It wasn't like he made it weird or anything. He just said the chess deep.
Chess deep feels like, what am I in if I'm chess deep? What am I? Why do we have to say chess deep? Can't we just say who are two guys who are in the thick of it? Why do we have to say?
What do you want? Nipple deep?
Yeah, I don't know. These two guys are up to their nipples in something. I don't know. What? Chest deep is just very specific. It makes me oddly uncomfortable. These two guys are chest deep in whatever BS they're slinging. I don't know.
You know, and now that I think about it, nobody's ever been chest deep in something good. You know, you
yes, exactly. That's what I mean. You got me in mid-sip. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, you're chest deep. You're in quicksand or something.
When the last time, Brad, were you chest deep in flowers or chest deep in M&Ms? You're always you're always chest deep in mud or quicksand or bullpucky or whatever it is. You know that kind of thing. Anyway, though. I want to say thank you to Punk Gun for the kind words. That is very kind of you, and we super appreciate the kind words over at the iTunes Apple Podcast there.
Absolutely, and that means you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my delightful friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. over at evil-comic.com.
And my good buddy Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped, and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
We just ask that you don't use the phrase chest deep again. That's our only request. These two guys are nipple deep in great quality content.
The only thing that could make that worse is the word tepid. You wouldn't want to be, if you're nipple deep in something, you'd want it to be warm. If it was tepid, it would be tepid. The worst ever. Tepid.
These two guys are nipple deep in quality advice for your cartooning. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to say Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab. Well, hello, Bradley J. It's me, Rue McClanahan.
Oh, Miss McClanahan, you look so beautiful this evening.
Well, Bradley, I must say I do love this outfit. Are those black socks with the Birkenstock sandals? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I wore them just for you. Rue McClanahan, can I ask you one favor? Could you apply the sciatica cream to my thighs? I do love the way you do that.
Oh, Bradley J.
Rue, I noticed that you're nipple deep in that basketball.
In sciatica cream.
Yeah, you're nipple deep, and that means that's a very shallow pond.
What? Wait a minute, that's a think piece. I had to figure out what's going on there.
Because her nipples are low, because she's Rue McClanahan.
Oh, that was the joke. I'm out.